about your father.
I see. An awkward pause. Were they true things, though?
Well, yes, but they still pissed me off.
Why? I thought you hated him.
When you left Company Candiano or so, there was a lot of bad blood between you and my father. Bad blood, he said, is still blood. How is Tribuno these days?
Still dying, Estelle said curtly, and still mad. So, about as bad as one can get.
I see,
he said quietly. She peered at him.
My God, she said. My God, could that be pity, crossing the once handsome face of the infamous Orso Ignacio? Could it be regret? Could it be sorrow? I'd never have believed it. Stop. I never saw this tenderness when you were with us, Orso.
That isn't true, said Orso sharply.
I apologize. I meant tenderness for him.
That isn't true either.
Orso thought carefully about what to say.
Your father was, and probably still is, the most brilliant scriver in all the history of Tavan. He practically built this damned city. A lot of his designs are still keeping everything standing. That means something, even if the man himself changed a lot.
Changed, she said. Is that the word for it? To watch him decay, to watch him rot and corrupt himself, chasing after these occidental vanities, spending hundreds of thousands of devats on decadent fantasy. I am not sure I just call that change. We still haven't recovered, you know. She glanced at the crowd behind her. Look at us. Just a handful of servants, dressed like clerks. We used to practically own the council. We'd walk through these halls like gods and angels. How far we've fallen.
I know. And you're not scribing anymore, are you?
Estelle seemed to deflate. No. How did you know?
Because you were a damn clever scriver back when I knew you.
They exchanged a look, and both understood there were unspoken words there.
Even if your father never recognized it.
For though Tribuno Candiano had been a wildly brilliant man, he'd been supremely disinterested in his daughter, and had made it well known that he'd have preferred a son. And perhaps that was why he'd treated her as he had. For when Tribuno Candiano's occidental obsessions had bankrupted his merchant house, he'd essentially auctioned off his daughter's hand in marriage to pay off his debts. And young Tomas Ziani, scion of the outrageously wealthy Ziani family, had been only too keen to buy the rights.
What do you mean? She asked.
If Tomas was letting you work, said Orso, you'd have turned Company Candiano around, I bet. You were good, damned good.
That's not the place of a chief officer's wife, though.
No. Seems like an officer's wife's place is here, waiting in the halls, and being seen waiting in the halls, meek and obedient.
She glared at him. Why did you come talk to me, Orso? Just to dig your fingers in old wounds?
No. Then what?
He took a breath.
Listen, Estelle. There's some shit going on.
Are you sure you can talk about this? Or will Ophelia Dandolo have your balls braised for it?
She probably would, he said. But I'm going to say it anyway. Regarding your father's materials, his occidental collection, I mean. All that stuff he bought. Are those still at Company Candiano? Or were those auctioned away?
Why? She demanded. He remembered how Tomas Ziani had looked at him,
smirking.
Just curious.
I don't know, she said. All of that is under Tomas's control now. I'm nowhere close to management or so.
He thought about this. Tomas Ziani was sinfully rich, and had a reputation as a cunning merchant. But a scriver, he wasn't. When it came to sigils, he probably couldn't tell his ass from a hole in the ground.
The idea of him making something as powerful as the listening rig or the gravity plates was laughable. But Tomas had resources and ambition. What he couldn't make himself, he could perhaps buy.
And he might still have access, thought Orso, to the smartest scriver in all of Tavan.
Does Tomas ever see Tribuno? He asked.
Sometimes, said Estelle, now deeply suspicious.
Does he talk to him, and if so, what about?
This is now thoroughly out of line, she said.
What's going on, Orso?
I told you, there's some shit going on in the city. Estelle, if Tomas was going to make a play at me, to come at me, you'd tell me, wouldn't you?
What do you mean, come at you? Orso pulled down the edge of his scarf with a finger and allowed her a glimpse of his bruised neck. Her eyes opened wide.
My God, Orso, who did that to you?
That's what I'm trying to find out. So, if Tomas was going to make a play like this for me, would you warn me?
Do you really think Tomas could have done that?
I've had some civilized and proper people try to kill me over the years. Do you know anything, Estelle? And again, if you did, would you tell me?
She stared at him, and a mixture of expressions passed over her face. Surprise, anger, resentment, then sadness.
Do I owe you that?
I think so, said Orso. I never asked you for much.
She was silent for a long while.
That's not true, she said.
You did ask me to marry you, but after that, no. You never asked me for anything else again. They stood in the hallway, surrounded by servants, not knowing what to say. Estelle blinked rapidly. If I thought Tomas was a threat to you, I would tell you or so.
Even if it betrayed Candiano interests to do so?
Even if it did that.
Thank you.
He bowed deeply to her.
I appreciate your time, Lady Ziani.
He turned and walked away. He kept his head level and his arms stiff as he moved. Once he was about a few hundred feet down the hall, he ducked beside a column and watched the company Candiano crowd. He could tell when Tomas Ziani and the others emerged. The servants all sat up straight, keenly aware that their masters were now here. But not Estelle. She stood, seemingly frozen, staring into space. And when her husband came and took her hand and led her away, she barely seemed to notice. Chapter 17. Sanchia was still asleep when there was a knock at the door.
Sun is setting.
Gregor's voice said.
Our chariot shall be here soon.
Sanchia groaned, hauled herself off the sheetless bed, and staggered downstairs. All the injuries and scrapes from the past 2 days felt like they'd grown until her whole body was a bruise. When she saw Gregor, she realized he must feel the same way. He was standing crooked, so as not to put pressure on his back. And he had his bandaged arm pulled close to his chest. After a while, the front door opened and Berenice walked in. She looked at the two of them.
Good God, she said. I've seen cheerier faces in a mausoleum.
Come on, the carriage is ready. I'll warn you, though, he's in a foul mood.
He doesn't seem like the kind of guy who has good moods, said Sanchia, following her.
Then this is a worse mood, said Berenice.
She drove them back to the Hippotas department just as the sun slipped behind the clouds.
Are you ready for this, Clef? Sanchia asked.
Sure, he said. He sounded chipper and cheerful again.
And you feel all right?
I feel great, really great. That's kind of the problem, kid.
She tried not to let her concern show in her face.
Cheer up, said Clef. I'll get you out of this jam at the least, I promise.
The Hippotas offices were still and dark. They used a back entrance to a small, forgotten staircase, and they climbed until they found Orso waiting at the top, next to his workshop.
So that's the guy who bought me, huh?
Asked Clef.
Yeah. What's he like?
Took you damned long enough, snapped Orso. God, I thought I'd die of scrumming old age up here.
Never mind, I think I got it.
Good evening, Orso, said Gregor. How was the committee meeting?
Dull and short, said Orso. But not entirely useless. I had some ideas, and if we can find that damn rig, I can confirm if those ideas are right.
He stood and pointed at Sanchia.
You, are you ready to do this again?
Sure, said Sanchia.
Then please, he said. Astound us.
All right, give me a second. She looked down the stairs. To her, it was all just a sea of noise, of whispers and chanting. Clef?
Yeah?
So, you hear anything?
Oh, lots of stuff, but here. Let me focus.
There was a silence. She assumed he was searching and would answer her after he found something. But then things changed. The murmurings and chanting grew louder, and then the sound seemed to stretch and bubble and blur. Then words emerged among them, words she could hear. Bring heat, bring it up, bubble it up and store it away. There it goes. Keep the heat there. Oh, please, how I love to make the tank hot.
We'll not let anyone in. Absolutely no one. They cannot enter unless they possess key. Key is very important, and I...
Rigid form, rigid form, rigid form, pressure at the corners. I am like the stone in the depths of the earth.
Sanchia realized she could hear the scrivings, that she could understand them without touching them. She nearly fell over from shock. She was fairly sure she'd just heard some kind of water tank, a lock, and a scribed support structure, all from somewhere in the building.
Holy, holy shit, she said.
The voices returned to quiet chanting. What? Said Clef. What is it?
I could hear them. I could hear what they were saying, Clef. All the devices, all of them.
Huh?
Said Clef. There was a pause.
Yeah, I was worried that might happen.
That what might happen?
As I grow stronger, more of my thoughts may leak into you, into your brain, your mind. I'm, overpowering you a little, I think.
You mean I'm hearing what you hear?
And feeling what I feel, yeah, so...
Clef coughed.
I guess this could get weird.
She noticed Orso glaring at her impatiently. Is it dangerous?
I don't think so.
Then let's just ignore it for now. Find the recording rig before these bastards start worrying, and we'll figure this out later.
All right. It's like a thing that captures sound, right?
I guess I barely understand any of this shit.
Okay.
There was another pause, and then the voices flooded back into her head. An avalanche of words and desires and anxious fears. Except some of the voices grew louder or softer, rapidly, one after another. It was as if Clef were sorting through a stack of papers, looking at each one before passing on to the next. Except it was happening inside her brain. The sensation was profoundly disorienting. Then,
One voice arose from the chaos. I am a reed in the wind, dancing with my partner, my mate, my love. I dance as they dance. I move as they move. I trace our dance within the clay.
That's it, said Clef. That's the one. Hear it?
Dancing, clay, love, what the hell?
That's how they think, how they work, said Clef. These rigs are made by people, and people make things that work kind of like people. If you want a device to do something, you build the desire into the device, see? It's in the basement, I think. Come on.
I've got it, I think, said Sanchia.
Then lead the way, said Gregor.
Listening to the whispering device, Sanchia wandered through workshops filled with half-built devices, rows of cold furnaces, wall after wall of bookshelves. Clef led her down the stairs, across the mezzanine, and then to a side hall, which then led to another stairway. Then he led her down flight after flight of stairs, to the basement, which seemed to double as a library. Orso, Berenice, and Gregor followed, bearing small, scribed lights, not speaking. But Sanchia's head was filled up with words. She was still getting used to this. For so long, she'd been accustomed to scrivings being nothing more than murmurings in the back of her head. To have Clef clarify them was like having someone wipe away a layer of sand to reveal words written on the path before you. But if I'm hearing this from him, wondered Sanchia, what else am I picking up? And what's he picking up from me? She wondered if she would start to think like Clef, to act like him, and never even notice it. They entered the basement, and then abruptly the trail ended before a blank wall. Now what? Asked Sanchia.
It's, back there.
What do you mean, back there, behind the wall?
Seems to be. I can show you where it is, but I can't tell you how to get to it. Listen.
Another pause, and then she heard it, mumbling behind the walls.
Still no dance, still no sounds. Silence. Nothing to dance to, no steps and twirls to scrawl in the clay.
Yeah, said Sanchia. She stepped back and looked at the wall. It's back there. Shit. She sighed and said, anyone know what's behind this wall?
More wall, I would assume, said Orso.
It's not. The things back there.
You found the rig? Gregor asked. You're sure?
Yes. Now we just have to figure out how they access it. She grimaced, then pulled off her gloves. Hold on a second.
She took a breath, focused, shut her eyes, and placed her palms against the wall. Instantly, the wall bloomed inside her mind. All those old, pale stones and layers of plaster leaping into her thoughts. The wall told her of age and pressure. Decades spent bearing all the weight of the building above and transferring it to the foundation below. Except, in one place, the foundation wasn't there. A passageway, she thought.
Keeping her eyes shut, she walked along the wall, bare palm pressed to its surface. Finally, she came to it. The gap in the foundation was just below her. She opened her eyes, knelt, and pressed her palms to the floor. The floorboards crackled to life inside of her, creaking and groaning, telling her of thousands of footfalls, leather soles and wooden soles, and sometimes bare feet. Her skull tickled as termites and ants and other tiny insects roved through her splintering bones. But one part of the floor was different. It was separate, and it had something screwed into it.
Hinges. Thought Sanchia. A door.
She followed the feeling in her mind until she came to the far corner of a dusty blue rug. She pulled it aside. Underneath was an old and scarred trap door.
A basement? Said Gregor. When the hell did we get a basement? Asked Orso.
The scribing library was renovated years ago, said Berenice. Much of the old walls were torn down and built over. Artifacts are still around. Doors that go nowhere. Things like that.
Well, this goes somewhere, said Sanchia.
She wedged her fingers underneath it and lifted the trap door up. Below it was a short flight of musty stairs, which ended in a small tunnel that ran behind the wall. It was completely dark at the bottom.
Here, said Berenice, holding out her light to Sanchia.
Sanchia put her glove back on, aware suddenly of Orso's careful gaze, and took it from her.
Thanks, she said,
and she dropped down, holding the scribed light. She touched a bare hand to the wall. The tunnel spoke to her, darkness and dust and cool, stale moisture. She followed its path to a small rickety ladder, which led to an old crawlspace, an interstitial segment of an older floor plan, walled off and forgotten. And at the far back was,
"A wait to trace my path in the pool of clay and wax. When will my mate begin to dance again? When shall we move? When shall we sway?"
"There it is," said Sanchia. "Finally. I'll crawl up and swipe the thing." She crawled forward.
"Wait," said Clef. "Stop."
She stopped. "What?"
"Move forward, just a bit. A foot, no more."
She did so.
"Shit," said Clef. "There's something else. It's almost overpowered by the listening rig. Hear it?"
Again, a voice emerged from the mutterings, but this one was not the recording rig.
"I wait. I wait for the signal, for the token, for the sign," said this new rig. "How I long to see the sign. How I long to feel it press upon me. But if not, if my lands are broached by those who do not bear the sign, oh, oh, the spark I shall make, bright and flashing, hot and sizzling, a brief, wondrous star."
"What the hell is that?" asked Sanchia.
"I don't know," said Clef. "It's back there with the recording rig, though, right next to it. I can't show you what it is, though, only what the scribings do."
Sanchia held the scribed light up, but she couldn't see that far back into the crawlspace. She thought about it, then pressed a bare hand into the wood. She felt wood and nails and dust and termites. And she felt the rig back there, or what she thought was the rig. It was some kind of iron stand that was quite heavy. She guessed the roll of wax or clay or whatever it rode on was big. But beside it was something else quite heavy. A barrel, she thought, wooden and round and filled with something. She smelled the air and thought she smelled something sulfurous. She froze.
"Clef, so this thing, if someone gets close to it without the right, signal or whatever..."
"Then it makes a spark," said Clef.
There was a pause.
"Wait,"
said Clef.
"Yeah?" said Sanchia.
"It's a bomb, isn't it?"
"Yeah, it's a goddamn bomb. A big goddamn bomb."
Another pause.
"I'm, going to walk away slowly," said Sanchia. "Really slowly."
"Good idea," said Clef.
"Great idea. I like this idea."
She slowly withdrew back down the passageway.
"I guess there is no way to break the scribings," she said.
"Not without touching it," said Clef. "I can see what it is, learn a bit about what it does, and I can show you, but I can't tamper with it without contact."
"So, we're scrummed."
"Unless you want to risk being blown into pudding, then, yeah, basically."
She sighed. "Well, let's go tell the others, then."
"So, we can't get close to it," said Gregor. "We're stuck here."
"Right," said Sanchia,
sitting on the floor in the dark, brushing dust off of her arms and knees. Orso stood in silence, staring down into the dark passageway. Ever since she'd returned, he hadn't said a word.
"Surely there must be a way around the device," said Berenice.
Gregor shook his head.
I've dealt with scribed minds in the wars. Unless you have the right signaling device on you, you'll be pulped.
So we can't get to the listening rig, said Berenice. But that can't be that critical, yes? I mean, we generally know all the things we've divulged to these people. Right, sir?
Orso didn't answer. He just kept staring down into the passageway.
I don't like that, said Clef.
Me neither. Said Berenice, disconcerted. Well, I mean, we could try to look at the rig itself to identify the person who made it, but I've been working on the gravity plates all afternoon, and I still have nothing.
Then we focus on what we know, said Sanchia. We know the rig's down there. We know it's working. We know everyone got to see Orso at this damn meeting, and they know he's alive now. So someone will be coming. Soon.
And when they come, said Gregor, we either capture them or follow them. Following them is my preference. It can reveal so many more things.
He sighed.
But I suppose capturing and questioning them is our only choice. We've no idea what Campo, this agent of theirs, would return to, nor which enclave within the Campo itself. We'd need sachets and keys and all sorts of credentials.
Sounds like fun to me, said Clef.
You sure you want to do that, Clef? We don't know what kind of obstacles we'd run into.
I told you, I don't want to sit uselessly in your pocket all day, kid.
I can talk to my black market contacts, said Sanchia. I can get sachets to get into the Campos.
You can get that many sachets? Asked Gregor, surprised.
The idea was preposterous,
but maybe they didn't know that.
Yeah.
And credentials? Asked Berenice.
If you pay me enough, said Sanchia, I can get you into the Campos.
Clef laughed.
That's an easy profit.
Then I think it's settled, said Gregor. You get your sachets. We set our trap and wait. Right?
Right, said Berenice. Right, said Sanchia. They all waited and turned to Orso.
Sir? Asked Berenice.
Finally, Orso moved, turning to look at Sanchia.
That was quite some performance,
he said quietly.
Thanks, she said.
He looked her over.
There's a simple way to stay alive as a Hippotas, you know. Never include a scribing in your designs that you don't completely understand. And girl, I must admit, I don't understand you at all.
You don't need to, said Sanchia. You just need to understand the results I get you.
No, said Orso. I need a lot more than that. For example, how do I know you're telling the truth about any of this?
Huh? She said.
You go into the dark. Say you found the rig, but we can't get close to it. If we go down there and look ourselves, we die. There's no way to check. That all seems convenient to me.
I've helped you before, she said. I found the damn rig in the statue.
But how did you do that? You never told us. You haven't told us a damned thing.
Orso, said Gregor. I believe we can trust her.
How can we trust her if we don't know how she's doing what she's doing? Finding a rig is one thing, but seeing through walls, finding the trap door. I mean, she went straight to it like a dog on the hunt.
Uh-oh, said Clef.
Orso turned to her.
You figured all this out just by listening?
Yeah.
And touching the walls?
Yeah, what of it?
He stared at her for a long, long time.
Where are you from, Sanchia?
He demanded. Foundry side, she said defiantly.
But where originally?
Back east.
But where east? Go east enough and you'll find it.
Why are you so evasive?
Because it's none of your damn business.
But it is my business. You made yourself my business when you stole my key.
He stepped closer, squinting at her, his eye tracing over the scar on the side of her head.
I don't need you to tell me, he said quietly. I don't need you to tell me anything. I already know.
She tensed up. Her heart was beating so fast it felt like a murmur.
Silicio, said Orso. The Silicio Plantation. That's where you're from, isn't it?
The next thing she knew, Sanchia had her hands around his throat. She hadn't meant to do it. She'd barely even understood what was happening. One moment she'd been sitting on the floor. Then Orso spoke that name, and suddenly she smelled the sting of alcohol, heard the whine of flies, and the side of her head was bright with pain. And then she was screaming and throttling a terrified Orso Ignacio, trying to crush his already bruised windpipe with her bare hands. She was screaming something over and over again. It took her a moment to realize she was saying, "Was it you? Was it you? Was it? Was it?" Berenice was suddenly on top of her, trying to haul her off of him with little success. Then Gregor was there, and since he was two, if not three times Sanchia's size, he had much more success. Gregor Dandolo hugged Sanchia tight to his body, his big arms holding her still.
"Let me go," she screamed. "Let me go, let me go, let me go!"
"Sanchia," said Gregor, surprisingly calm. "Stop. Be still." Orso was coughing and gagging and trying to sit up.
"What in all the damned world?"
"I'll kill him," screamed Sanchia. "I'll kill you, you scrumming bastard!"
"Sanchia," said Gregor, "you are not where you think you are."
"What's the matter with her?" said Berenice, terrified.
"She's having a reaction," said Gregor. "I've seen this among veterans and experienced it myself."
"He did it!" shrieked Sanchia.
She kicked uselessly at Gregor's legs.
"It was him! It was him! It was him!"
"She's reliving a memory," he said, grunting slightly. "A bad one."
"It was him!"
she screamed. She felt the blood vessels standing out on her forehead, felt the hot, muggy air on her skin, heard the songs in the fields, the whimpering in the dark.
"It was! It was!"
Orso coughed, shook himself, and shouted,
"It wasn't me!"
Sanchia struggled against Gregor's arms. Her back and neck burned with fatigue, but still she struggled.
"Kid," said Clef in her ear. "Kid, are you listening? He said it wasn't him. Come back to me. Wherever you are, come back, please."
Sanchia slowed as she heard Clef's words. The many sensations of the plantation retreated from her mind. Then she went limp, exhausted. Orso sat on the ground, panting, and then said,
"It was not me, Sanchia. I had nothing to do with Silicio. Nothing, I swear."
Sanchia said nothing. Her breath was ragged and she was spent. Gregor slowly lowered her to sit on the floor. Then he cleared his throat, like they'd all had a loud disagreement at the breakfast table.
"I must ask, what is this Silicio?"
Orso looked at Sanchia. Sanchia glared back but did not speak.
"To me, it was no more than a rumor," said Orso. "A rumor of a slave plantation where scribers practiced the one art we are strictly forbidden to pursue."
Berenice turned to stare at him, horrified. Gregor said,
"You mean..."
"Yes," said Orso, sighing.
"The scribing of human beings. And to look at Sanchia, it seems like it worked. At least once. Barely anyone remembers the first days, when they tried scrying humans.
Orso said darkly, sitting at the head of one of the big wooden tables in the scrying library.
Nor would they wish to. I was hardly out of school when they outlawed it. But I saw the cases. I know what happened. I know why they abandoned it.
Sanchia sat silent at the other end of the table, gently rocking back and forth. Gregor and Berenice glanced between her and Orso, waiting to hear more.
We know how to change an object's reality, said Orso carefully. We speak the language of objects. To speak this language to people, to try to command our bodies with our sigils, it doesn't work.
Why?
Asked Gregor.
On one level, it's because we're just not good enough, said Orso. It's kind of like safely scrying gravity, only worse. It would take a huge amount of effort to do 3, 4, 5 lexicons, all to alter one person.
But on another level?
On another level, it doesn't work because objects are dumb, said Orso. Scrying is all about careful, precise definition, and objects are easy there. Iron is iron, stone is stone, wood is wood. Objects have an uncomplicated sense of self, so to speak. People, though, and living things, their sense of self is complicated, mutable. It changes. People don't think of themselves as just a bag of flesh and blood and bones, even if that's what they basically are. They think of themselves as soldiers, as kings, as wives and husbands and children. People can convince themselves to be anything, and because of that, the scryvings you bind them with can't stay anchored. To try to bind a person is like writing in the ocean.
So, what happened to the people the scrivers tried to alter? Asked Gregor.
Orso was quiet for a long while.
Even I won't speak of such things. Not now, not ever, if I can help it.
Then where did this Silesio come from, sir? Asked Berenice.
The practice is illegal in Tavan, said Orso. But the laws of Tavan, as we are all well aware, are weak and restricted. Intentionally so. None of them extend to the plantations. The policy of Tavan has always been that, provided we get our sugar, coffee, and whatever else on time, we couldn't care less about what goes on out there. So, if it was communicated to a plantation that, if they accommodated a handful of scrivers from Tavan and supplied them with specimens to experiment on,
then they would receive a bonus or an amenable contract or some kind of lucrative reward, said Gregor dourly,
from one of the merchant houses. On matters completely unrelated to these visiting scrivers, said Orso. It all looks above board from a distance.
But why, said Berenice, why experiment on humans at all, sir? We're successful with our devices. Why not focus on those?
Think, Berenice, said Orso. Imagine if you'd lost an arm or a leg, or were dying from some plague. Imagine if someone could develop a sigil string that could cure you, or regrow a limb, or...
Or keep you alive for much, much longer, said Berenice softly. They could scrive you, so that you could cheat death itself.
Or they could scrive a soldier's mind, said Gregor. Make them fearless. Make it so they don't value their own lives. Make them do despicable things, and then forget they'd ever done them. Or make them bigger, stronger, faster than all other soldiers.
Or scribe slaves to thoughtlessly do their master's bidding, said Berenice, glancing at Sanchia.
The possibilities, said Orso, are beyond count.
And this is what Cilicia was? Asked Gregor. An experiment run by a merchant house?
I'd only heard rumors of it. Some plantation out in the Durazzo, where people were still attempting the forbidden arts. I heard it moved around from island to island to make it harder to trace. But a few years ago, news came of a disaster on the island of Cilicio. A whole plantation house burned to the ground. All the slaves were running wild, and among those killed in the blaze were a number of Tavani scrivers, though no one could quite explain what they'd been doing there.
He looked at Sanchia, who was sitting completely still now, her face totally blank of all expression.
Which house was behind this experiment? Gregor asked.
Oh, it probably wasn't just one merchant house, said Orso. If one was trying to scribe humans, they all were. It might still be going on for all I know. Or perhaps Cilicio scared them all off.
Even, Gregor furrowed his brow. Even Dandolo chartered?
Oh, Captain, how many merchant houses have been doomed because they were too slow to bring a new design to market? How many careers have ended because a competitor found a way to make better wares?
But to do that, said Berenice, to people. Suddenly, Sanchia laughed.
God, God, as if that was any worse, as if that was any worse than the other things happening out there.
They looked at her, uneasy. What do you mean? Asked Berenice.
Don't you understand what the plantations are? Said Sanchia. Think of it. Think of trying to control an island where the slaves outnumber you 8-1. How would you keep them in line? What would you do to keep them docile? What sort of tortures would you apply to those who lashed out? If any of you could understand the things I've seen.
Do they really? Said Berenice. Then why do we allow the plantations to exist?
Orso shrugged. Because we're stupid and lazy. After the first stage of the Enlightenment Wars, which was, what, 20 or 30 years ago, Tavan had expanded and exhausted itself. It needed cheap grain, cheap resources, and it had a lot of captives on hand. It was to be a short-term fix, but then we got dependent on it. And it just keeps getting worse and worse.
Sanchia shook her head. Scribing the human body? Those horrors are nothing, nothing, compared to all the other horrors that make the islands run. And if I had the chance, I'd do it all over again.
Gregor looked at her. Sanchia, how did Cilicio burn?
She was silent for a long while.
It burned, she said, because I set it alight.
She started speaking. They brought her to the big house behind the plantation, then down to the basement, down to where that place was. She hadn't even known the word for it. Mortuary? Laboratory? Some cross in between? Sanchia hadn't understood. She'd just smelled the alcohol, looked at the drawings and illustrations on the wall, and all those plates with the strange signs written on them. And she'd remembered the wagon that left the house every morning, reeking and followed by flies. And she'd known in an instant that she wasn't getting out of there alive. They'd forced her to drink a sedative, a powerful brandy of some kind, awful and putrid. It had made her brain muddy and slow, but it didn't kill the pain that would come later. Not really. They'd cut off all her hair and shaved her pate with a razor. She remembered blinking blood out of her eyes. Then they'd dropped her down on the table, tied her down, and the one-eyed scriver had wiped her skull with alcohol. How it burned,
And then...
Desperate times,
the one-eyed scriver had sighed, picking up a knife.
Do call for desperate measures. But don't we have the right to be unorthodox, my dear?
He'd smiled at her, a simpering expression.
Don't we?
And then he'd cut her head open. Sanchia had no words for the sensation, no words for the feeling of having your scalp slashed open and peeled back like the skin of an orange, no words for feeling him measure the bend of your skull and listening to him tap, tap the plate into shape, no words for suddenly feeling those screws, those horrid screws biting into you, the gritty, grinding feeling as they bored into your skull. And then, things had gone black. She'd died. She'd been sure of it at the time. There'd been just nothing. But then she'd felt someone lying on top of her, felt their warmth, felt them bleeding. It had taken her a long time to realize she was feeling herself. She'd been feeling her own body lying on a dark stone floor. Only she'd been feeling herself from the perspective of the floor. She'd become the floor just by touching it. In the dark, alone, young Sanchia had awoken and done her best to recollect her sanity. Her skull had screamed and shrieked with pain. One whole side was swollen and sticky and bristly with stitches. But she'd realized then, alone, blind, that she was perhaps becoming something else, like a moth struggling to fight its way out of its pupa. There had been chains around her wrists, a lock. And because of what she'd become, she'd felt she was the chains. She was the lock. And so she'd known how to pick it, of course, using a shred of wood she'd pulled off the wall. They hadn't intended this, surely. They hadn't planned for her to become this thing. If they had, they would have tied her up better. And they wouldn't have sent the one-eyed scriver alone to check on her in the night. The creak of the door, the spear of light stabbing into the shadows.
Are you awake, Poppet?
He'd called sweetly.
I doubt it.
He'd probably thought she'd be dead. He certainly hadn't expected her to be hiding in the corner, lock and chain in hand. She'd waited until he'd stepped inside. Then she'd sprung. Oh, to hear the sound of the thick, heavy lock striking his skull. Oh, to hear him crumple to the ground, gagging, shocked. Then she was on him, wrapping the chain around his throat and pulling it taut, tighter and tighter and tighter. Wild, agonized and covered in blood, she'd slipped out and roved through the darkened house, feeling the boards beneath her, the walls on either side of her, feeling all these things, feeling everyone in the house all at once. The house had become her weapon, and she'd used it against them. She'd locked their bedroom doors, one by one, locked everything as they slept, except one way out. And then she'd gone downstairs to where they'd kept the alcohol and the kerosene and all those reeking fluids, and found a match. A struck match sounds like a kiss in the dark sometimes. She remembered thinking that, watching the flame crack to life and then flutter down to the pools of alcohol running across the floor. No one had made it out. And as she'd sat and watched, she'd realized, master or slave, all screams sounded alike. Silence filled the library. Nobody moved.
How did you come to Tavan?
Asked Gregor. Snuck aboard a ship, Sanchia said softly. Easy to stow away when you have the floorboards and the walls to tell you who's coming and going. When I got off, I stole the name Grotto from a winery sign I saw, since everyone just expected me to have a last name. Hardest thing was figuring out the limits of what I could do. Touching everything, being everything. It nearly killed me.
What's the nature of your augmentation? Asked Orso.
She tried to describe it.
knowing what objects were feeling, what they'd felt, the sheer avalanche of sensation that she constantly fought to keep at bay.
I try to touch as few things as possible, she said. I can't touch people, that's too much. And if the scrivings in my skull get overtaxed, they burn like hot lead in my bones. When I first came to Tavan, I had to wrap myself in rags like a leper. It didn't take me long to realize that what had been done to me was some kind of scrying. So I tried to find out how to get fixed, how to make me human again. But nothing in Tavan is cheap.
That was why you stole the key? Asked Berenice.
To pay for a Physicera?
A Physicera who wouldn't turn and sell me out to a merchant house, said Sanchia.
Yeah.
What?
Said Orso, startled.
A what?
A Physicera, she said. One that can fix me.
A Physicera? Who can fix you?
He said faintly.
Sanchia. My God,
you are aware that you are probably the only one of your kind alive, yes?
I know I've never seen a scrumming, scribed human in my life, and I've seen boatloads of mad shit. The idea of a Physicera who can just, I don't know, patch you up? It's preposterous.
She stared at him. But I'd been told that they'd found a Physicera who knew what to do.
Then either they were lying, said Orso, or being lied to. No one knows how to do what was done to you, let alone reverse it. They were probably going to either take your money and cut your throat, or take your money and sell you to the closest house. Shit, said Clef, dismayed.
Sanchia was trembling. So what are you saying? Are you saying I'm stuck like this forever?
How should I know? Said Orso. I told you I've never even seen this before.
Sir, hissed Berenice. Some tact, please. Orso looked at her, and then Sanchia, who was now white and quivering.
Oh, hell, listen. After all this, you can stay here. With me and Berenice, and maybe I try to figure out how in the hell they made you, and how to reverse it.
Really, said Gregor, that's charitable of you, Orso.
It damned well isn't, he said. The girl's a goddamn marvel. Who knows what kind of secret she's literally carrying around in her head?
Gregor rolled his eyes.
Of course.
Do you think you could actually figure it out? Said Sanchia.
I think I have a better chance than every other dumb bastard in this city, said Orso.
Sanchia considered it. What do you think, Clef?
I think this nutter doesn't care about money, and someone who doesn't care about money is less likely to sell you out.
I'll consider it, she said.
Terrific, said Orso. But let's not get too tickled over the idea yet. There's some devilish asshole out there who wants us all dead. Let's make sure we're going to have a future before we start planning for one.
Right, said Sanchia. Do you think you can rig up another tailing scrying? She asked Berenice. Like the one you used on Gregor? Of course, she said. Those aren't tricky at all. Good. She looked at Gregor. And you, are you able to come with me to follow this bastard? To her surprise, Gregor looked uncertain.
Well, that is unlikely.
Why?
Probably for the same reason Orso can't assist either.
Gregor cleared his throat.
Because I am moderately recognizable.
He means he's famous, said Orso. Because he's Ophelia Dandolo's scrumming son.
Yes. And if I were to be seen strolling around the other campos, that would raise alarms.
But I'm going to need someone with me, said Sanchia. I've been shot at by these assholes so many times,
It'd be nice to have someone to shoot back for a change.
Gregor and Orso looked at each other, then at Berenice. She sighed deeply.
Fine. I don't know why I'm always the one following people around the city, but I suppose I can assist.
But, said Sanchia, I mean, I'm sure Berenice is very organized and helpful, but I was hoping for someone a bit more robust.
Although Captain Dandolo is admirably large of arm, said Orso, the nice thing about scrying is that it makes this.
He tapped his head.
A much more tangibly dangerous weapon. And in that regard, young Berenice has little competition. I've seen the things she can make. Now, shut up and get to work.
Chapter 18. Sanchia sat alone in the library broom cupboard and dozed. It was not sleep. Sleeping now while she waited for the spy would be disastrous. Rather, it was a kind of meditation she'd taught herself long ago, slumbering while alert and aware. It was not as restful as actually sleeping, but it didn't leave her as vulnerable. There was the sound of footfalls somewhere upstairs.
It's not them, said Clef.
Sanchia took a breath and resumed resting. Minutes ticked by in the dark. Then there was the sound of a door closing somewhere.
Not them either, said Clef.
Okay, thanks.
She tried to return to her dozing. This moment alone in the cupboard was invaluable to Sanchia, who desperately needed rest, and also, frankly, needed some time without any stimulation at all. Being immersed in so many scryvings was deeply wearying for her. Clef was doing her a favor, of course, or at least trying to. Since the spy would have to be carrying a scribed signal to access the rig, that made it easy for him to identify them. But it didn't help that he kept telling her all the ones that weren't the spy. The sound of footsteps echoed above her.
Not them, said Clef.
Clef, goddammit, you don't need to tell me all the times it's not them. Just tell me when it is them.
Okay, well, I'm pretty sure this next one is them.
Huh?
A door opened somewhere in the basement.
Yeah, that's them, said Clef. They've got the signal. Listen.
There was a silence, and then the chanting and whispering peaked, and she heard a voice among them.
I am given rights, given forbearance, because I am chosen. I am allowed, because I am awaited. I am expected. I am needed.
God, said Sanchia, are all scrying so neurotic?
They're compelled to act in one specific fashion, said Clef, which is basically the definition of neurotic, if that helps.
Sanchia reached out and touched the floor with a bare hand. The wooden boards crackled to life in her mind, one by one, and eventually she felt someone slowly walking across them. A woman. Sanchia could tell by the size of the feet, the build of the shoe, the gait, walking very cautiously.
She's spooked, said Clef.
This is an emergency pickup. I'd be spooked too.
The woman walked by the broom cupboard and even tried the knob, though it was locked.
Must be checking everything, thought Sanchia.
Then finally she went to the trap door to the rig. Sanchia waited and waited and waited. One finger pressed to the floor. Then she felt the reverberations in the wood as the trap door shut. Then footsteps as she came back. And these footsteps were slightly heavier.
She's got it, said Sanchia.
Sanchia waited until the woman had passed, turned the corner, and started up the stairs. Then she silently unlocked and opened the broom cupboard door and chased after her. She caught up with the woman on the main floor of the Hippotas building, exiting through the lobby. It was late afternoon, and the building was quite busy, though Sanchia was wearing Dandolo chartered colors, so she drew no attention. Sanchia spied the woman immediately. She was young, hardly older than Sanchia herself. A skinny, dark-skinned thing, dressed in formal yellow and white robes, and bearing a large leather